inside the off stump. Oh, he's caught it! I don't believe it! Tom Coler-Cadmore has caught the most magnificent catch. That short third man is the end of Daniel Sams, and Somerset have won the Vitality Blast 2023. They've bowled Essex out for 131.
Hello there, you're listening to Always Look on the Bright Side of Life. This is the Somerset Cricket Podcast. My name's Ian Shepherd. Joining me this evening, I've got lifelong and lifelong suffering Somerset fan Steve Tancock, Elon Musk's mortal enemy Dan Kingdom, journalist and broadcaster Harry Ever, and the voice of cricket on BBC Radio Somerset, Anthony Gibson. So, should we start with the big news this week? Dan, what happened to your Twitter account? You've been banned.
Yeah, it's 3 days after April Fool's Day, after my usual, my annual joke, 10 years of doing it, I went on Twitter and suddenly it said I've been suspended. So, who knows what will happen. I mean, I might be able to get it back. I've, like, appealed, like, grovelling to them. Because, they've said it's for impersonation, because obviously I did my, impersonated the ECB for April Fool's, which... clearly someone at the ECB saw it and reported it because they're a job's worth. Twitter have banned me for now. But yeah, we'll see.
I mean, do wonder if it's the same poor sod that's been receiving your emails for the last 10 years, Dan, and has got some sweet revenge on you.
It could well be. But yeah, they won't silence me forever. I'm sure I'll be back at some point, whether it's my old account or a new account.
Are you going to go on to Threads instead, Dan?
I don't know. I mean, it's only worth
it. Should
people on there, isn't there? I don't know.
Not sure if it's reached a critical mass. Yeah, I did put out a tweet in support of you, Dan, which you obviously won't have seen, being that you've been excommunicated. And a few people asked, what was the joke this year? I did read it, but I couldn't remember.
That's the funny thing, right? The last couple of years, my April Fool's tweet has really banged. It's gone like more than 1,000 likes the last couple of years. This year, it got like 30 likes. Like, it didn't go very far at all. So it's mad that this is the year where they've got me. It was basically, the joke was basically the 100 teams are going to be rebranded IPL names. For example, London Challengers, Bengaluru, Welsh Indians, that Northern Capitals. Yeah. Apparently, well, maybe that is actually what's going to happen.
And I was going to say, maybe they thought you've leaked some pretty sensitive information there.
Yeah, be interesting if it does happen how many I got right, like how many of the team.
Well, you never know, because that tweet's gone forever.
That's all right, don't worry, I always screenshot my April Fool's tweets, keep a record of them.
Well, I think that was going to be a marginally more interesting chat than talking about both teams really slogging their guts up with that Kookaburra ball down on a road at Canterbury. Good to see Canterbury have got a bit of spice in their pitches. Last season they were very, very anodyne and docile, and other long words that I looked up on thesaurus.com today. Gibbo, when you were interviewing Lewis Gregory, you asked him, what do you think of the Kookaburra ball? He said, can I swear? Your correct response to it, of course you fucking can. That Kookaburra ball is a piece of shit and it's ruining the bloody county game.
Discuss. I think that's what he would have said if he hadn't have been on air. And I do know what the ECB are up to, and they're just disrespecting county cricket, if you ask me. And it made for some very dull cricket, and I'm afraid it will probably make for some pretty dull cricket at the Oval this coming weekend as well. I mean, the only thing to be said for it. And it was Tom Lammonby who said this. He said that Matt Parkinson bowled really quite well with it, as for a spinner. I think for a spinner, there's something in it, but for a seam bowler on a dead early season pitch, absolutely nothing. It wasn't great, but we batted really well.
I thought you were going to say Tom Lammonby liked it because he got 90 and. He
timed the ball as well as I've ever seen him, or certainly as well as I've seen him since 2020, when he had his breakthrough season. And they all batted well. Even Sean Dixon didn't get very many runs, but he looked the part. Tom Banson, it was great to see him playing his natural game. I didn't ask him whether he'd been given license to play like that. Great to see. And James Rowe, you know, looked in good form, and Casey Aldridge with the, I mean, the real revelation for me, Casey Aldridge batted beautifully, but he bowled really well with that wretched ball, you know, middle of the afternoon, middle of the Kent first innings. And he came in and he really hit the pitch hard, and he was bowling a good yard, 2 yards quicker than he had been last season. Jason Kerr said, I said, why wasn't he brought on until the 42nd over? He said, well, it's up to the captain. He said, but perhaps not being brought on to until the 42nd over accounted for some of the extra pace, because he was so fed up having been used. But it was a very impressive all-round performance from Casey Aldridge as an individual and from the batting side collectively.
Yeah, I mean, given that it was a three-day game on a flat pitch with a Kookaburra ball, they really only left 1 point at Canterbury, if you think about it. They didn't get the 450, but they probably could have plotted their way to 450 at the expense of giving themselves that outside chance on the last day of bowling Kent out, which looked very much a distinct possibility, Steve, at 10 for 2, but then it didn't look a distinct possibility when they closed on 2 and, well, Daniel Bell Drummond and Joe Denley got together, and that was that.
I mean, it's one of those pitches that was dead to start with and died even more on that last day, didn't it? But I'm gonna rage, if I'm allowed, about the omission of Bashir, and I'm not being wise with hindsight. I just thought it was a terrible decision, and doubly backed up by the number of overs that the two part-time, and I'm sorry to say Lewis Goldsworthy, but he has to be classed as a part-time spinner at the moment. He's not bowled enough or taken enough wickets in red ball cricket, and I just couldn't understand when
in red ball cricket before today that game.
But I just can't understand why, when you've got a bowling attack that is very samey and is also, let's be honest, prone to injury and not really capable of heavy workloads, the only option you have in the squad, viable option for a bit of variety, was left out. And as Anthony said, Lammers commented on Matt Parkinson bowling really well with the Kookaburra ball. That would suggest to me that Bash would have bowled equally well, if not better, with the Kookaburra ball. So, and that last up, when they were 10 for 2, the option of putting him on and sealing up one end, or effectively sealing up one end for a long part of the afternoon and allowing the other bowlers to bowl in bursts, I think would have been a really good thing for Lewis to have in his armoury. But hey-ho, we live and suffer the head coach's decisions, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as Tom Banton hands his cap to the umpire, you kind of know that both captains have given up on achieving any sort of positive result on the game. What do we make of Jake Ball's contribution then? He did hit his first ball for 6. It was a delightful biff over long off, but combined match figures of 17 overs, 4 maidens, none for 87. I refuse to count that Ben Cobden wicket as a genuine wicket. My bat sat under my desk here in my cricket bag ready to go this year was closer to the ball than Ben Cobden's was down in Canterbury, I think. But we'll call it 1 for 87. But what did we make? From my perspective, it was difficult to judge on the stream, because I'm sure everyone listening who watched the stream will have noticed it was running at about 85-90% speed, and you constantly had to keep refreshing it to get it back to real time, which was a shame because we couldn't sync it up with your commentary on the BBC, Gibbo. But yeah, so it was difficult to judge how quickly the bowlers were bowling, but even so,
not very.
Is it fair to judge him on one performance with a Kookaburra ball on a pretty flat pitch? I mean, if you look at the performances of the other bowlers, it compares pretty favourably, to be honest.
No, it honestly didn't. He didn't bowl very well. He was bowling medium pace. He was bowling at least one crap ball and over. I mean, and he just didn't look the part. Lewis Gregory bowled very well. particularly in the first season. And again, in the second,
he got his radar.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, he had one bad over, but then he was right at them. Casey Aldridge bowled pretty well. Ned Leonard did his best. Strange, you know. I was thinking, I don't think I actually said this on commentary, but in the end, it came down, team selection came down to a choice between Shoaib Bashir, one of the heroes of England's tour of India, you know, with 2 5-fers in Test match cricket under the huge pressure under his belt, between him and Ned Leonard. And they chose Ned Leonard.
We do love old Ned Leonard on the podcast.
We love Ned Leonard, in all honesty. But Jake Ball, no. I don't know why they signed him. And he's a really nice bloke. They love him in the dressing room and all of that, but it wasn't really very impressive at all.
Potentially, they signed him as a squad bowler for when Craig Overton is unfit and when the overseas isn't here, and you know that was the circumstances, and he played. I mean, what other seam bowlers did we leave out? Ogbourne, Baker. That's it, I think, isn't it? So from that side of things, you can kind of understand why he's played, but I don't know.
Thing is, it continues how he did at Notts for the last few years. At Notts, he hardly played first class cricket, but when he has, his figures haven't been great. So obviously Somerset have signed him with, you know, they've said he has a point to prove and that'll make him better. And maybe it will, but clearly we need to give him more time. But yeah, game one for him wasn't particularly encouraging.
But we are.
Can I just ask him, sorry, before he plays for Somerset next, could he change his Twitter profile, take the picture away of the Notts kit, and also change professional cricketer Nottinghamshire and Trent Rockets or whatever it says on it? That really hacks me off when they're supposed to be so social media savvy. You've been signed for the club for about 7 months now and you haven't got round to changing that. Just really annoys me.
When was his last tweet? November the 12th.
Probably.
That's more or less around the time that he signed, I think. Mm. It's not a million miles away.
No.
Yeah,
I know I'm old and grumpy, but...
I would rather he said he was a massive Gloucester fan and took 48 wickets in the Championship this year. Who cares? Harry, what did you make of it all?
Yeah, it's tricky to judge, isn't it? Look. The Kookaburra. I mean, all this talk about the Kookaburra, and I've just changed my train tickets because my pre-season game's been rained off this weekend to have 3 days at the Oval. So Anthony doesn't seem as optimistic that there's been spending 3 days watching cricket, and the pictures will be probably flatter there, and Surrey are a better side than Kent. So, I mean, I think Kent are the weaker side in the division, to be honest with you. Well, Drummond and Denley, we know, are quality players, and they eventually showed what they can do in the second innings, but I guess, yeah, as you said, with a Kookaburra ball, with the rained off first day, we probably did as well as we could. You know, it'd be interesting to see how much difference Bashir would have made on that last day instead of Ned Leonard, which I think we all agree on. So, yeah, I think we did well with what we had. But would a Craig or a Bashir made a big difference to just get those extra couple of weeks? If we break that Bell, Drummond, Denley partnership, I'd back the rest of Kent to cave in and we'd have won that match.
Well, I'm not sure about that.
Well, I think they haven't got much from six down, was my issue, when Leaning went. And, you know, they haven't got much of the middle order now with Cox gone, with Billings gone. Harry Finch looked all right in the first innings, but I just didn't think they've got the batting depth that we've got.
Well, they had two good partnerships down the order in the first innings.
Yeah, Everson's been quite good. I say, you wouldn't expect Everson and Finch to do it again, but they did look good in the first innings.
Joey Everson's a good cricketer.
Yeah.
Right, so big news. Was it announced today or was it yesterday? It was yesterday, wasn't it? We have signed, as exclusively announced by me to you guys on email before they got out. I had a bit of a tip about this one, that a few guys had a word as well. But Miguel Pretorius, proud owner of 2 first-class wickets for Durham last year in 3 games. But he is tearing up in the South African domestic first class competition. Is it still called the Currie Cup? I'll probably show me
the CSA 4-day series.
The CSA, oh, the Currie Cup's a lot more more catchy. I think he's taken about 19 wickets at 25. He's averaging nearly 50 with the bat. So I don't think you can really take those really short, sharp spells being parachuted in to a county side for two or three games as a reliable indicator of players' ability. I think one of your favourite phrases, Dan, is small sample size. And we all know when you're parachuted in at the end of the season, September overseas is a very rarely a huge success. I mean, we all know, if you look at Neil Wagner, we all know what a fantastic cricketer he's been for New Zealand over the years, but doesn't really do much in the three games that he plays for us in September. So it's never a fantastic representation. But he is currently playing he's at the ground now, but he was playing for, is it Northern Titans, in not the CSA 20, but they're kind of their sort of second grade T20, their kind of state T20, and that doesn't finish for a couple of weeks, so I don't know whether South African cricket has got some sort of rule where you can just bugger off if you want. Do they have the same sort of no objections certificates as we do? I don't know.
Yeah, anyway, not the South African overseas. The South African overseas are playing club cricket. They won't come over for another two or three weeks because they'll finish off that T20 comp first. I guess it's a little bit different when Pretorius is coming to play 4-day cricket and have a pro contract than just playing weekend club cricket in the rain, but.
Yeah, I didn't. To be honest, I didn't actually look and see whether they can still qualify for the finals day or whatever the equivalent is in that comp.
I thought he was supposed to be available for selection at the Oval.
He is.
He's here.
Unless Ben's got some fantastic visual effects. He was stood on the outfield with Spencer this afternoon, talking about what a lovely, quiet little town Taunton is, and how much it was raining, and. Yes, even very confident and jovial and full of the joys of this eternal winter that we are still having. But yep, fit and available for selection at the Oval. The club did use a picture of Craig Overton, whose birthday it is today. Happy birthday, Craig. Happy birthday, yeah. Jamie, as well. Easy to remember them both. So he was Craig's picture was tweeted out as the, or users, or whatever you call it, the social media picture for the notification of the upcoming game at the Oval, which leads me to believe that he's going to be fit. Lewis Gregory said he was double bowling on Monday. I presume that means he bowls, I don't know, 30 balls and then goes and has a sit down and makes sure he's not seized up or anything. Harry, you're a coach. What's a double bowl?
I think it'd mean like a morning session and afternoon session. So like, I remember they're talking about the Exeter University, on media day, they're talking about the Exeter University lot. Training in the morning, they're meant to have a double session, but it rained in the afternoon, so they only got a morning session. Whereas, so with the weather being so bad, they've been able to go inside quite a lot. But yeah, if Craig can bowl, then have a rest, not seize up too much and bowl again, that's a good sign for his back surgery, wouldn't it, in the winter?
They normally, they'll announce this, what day are we, Wednesday, so they'll announce the squad tomorrow, normally 2 o'clock
tomorrow, yeah. So
we'll see. I mean, presumably, obviously, Pretorius comes straight in, Overton comes straight in if he's fit, Bashir comes back, so I mean, for me, we're leaving out Ball, Leonard and Davey for Overton, Pretorius and Bashir. Yeah. If Overton isn't fit, which seam bowler are you playing?
Davey.
Josh Davey.
Yeah, I've got Davey as well.
I'd probably have Davey in the squad, to be honest with you. I think even if Davey's not going to play, you'd probably want him as your first reserve.
Mm-hmm.
If there's an injury in the morning,
definitely. And we keep the
imagine
same.
Josh Davey at number 11. I mean, that'd be a hell of a batting order. If you look at whichever bowlers play, they can all bat.
Really, they can. Casey Aldridge must be the best number 8 in the country.
Yeah,
and he could be batting at 9 if they bump Pretorius above him.
No, they should do that.
Yeah, that'd be an interesting decision. It might be Craig at 10. I mean, he was at 7, Aldridge, Pretorius, Craig, and then Bashir or Davey.
Yeah.
I remember Craig batting 6 a couple of years ago. I remember the big debate pre-season and Craig batted ahead of Lewis for the season. Do you remember he got that 99 and got out, batted a 6, and now he might be 10.
but his batting's gone backwards since then.
And Casey's is going from strength to strength. I still maintain Casey's going to be a better bat than he is a bowler.
Well, he may be, but the way he bowled, if he's going to be a better bat, he'd be a bloody good batsman, I tell you.
I mean, he's just a quality cricketer. He's got to be the best fielder in the club up there with Tom Abel now, I'd say as well.
So let's go for
the
question.
I think the way he bowled is very encouraging, considering he wasn't so good with the ball last year. So it was very encouraging to see how well he bowled on Saturday.
Absolutely.
Against Kevin.
Couldn't agree more, Dan. Yeah.
So we'll go to a quick early question then. We only got one in this week, which was surprising. Alex asks how we would balance the bowling attack to give us as much wicket-taking threat as possible, varying heights, pace, Ogbourne's left arm, etc. How important is it that we continue to develop Goldsworthy, the bowler as well, the batter? And is Lamonby no longer a bowling option? It was slightly concerning that we didn't give Lamonby a go on Sunday, Monday? I'll get
any
confused
day.
Now. Monday, yeah.
Monday. I forgot to ask him. I was meaning to ask him whether he could bowl, and I forgot. But, you know.
Yeah.
He bowled against Exeter Uni, didn't he? Just a few overs.
Yeah. I mean, considering, you know, if he was a right-arm medium pacer, I'd have probably not been as bothered. But, you know, he does have that invaluable left-arm commodity, which does make you... you know, a point of difference and just changing the angle and a couple of other things. So, yeah, very strange.
Do we think that Banton was bowled ahead of him deliberately, or was that a bad light quick in the over?
I think there must have been a bet or something like that going on. There was something in the dressing room about all of that. Because, you know, Tom Banton is not a...
He was bowling off spin, he was bowling seam up. I mean, it was...
Yeah. It might be an upgrade from George Bartlett's off spin.
Well, that's true.
Already
well,
Byron, do,
that's George that. Bartlett's off spin in Division 2 this year, so, you know, he could tear right. it up.
Yeah. He looked all right with the bat. I watched a bit of George Bartlett bat for North Hens. That was one of the better games still going
still
on.
Still wandering cool. around all over the place?
Not quite as much on its end, but...
Did he get any runs? Did he get any runs?
He's got 30 and
27.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well,
looked good, but didn't quite go on. As sadly, was the tail, wasn't it?
Yes, that's pretty much the story of George Bartlett. Yes, does seem very odd that Lamonby didn't bowl unless, well, I don't know. There should just be a page or a Twitter account. Is there? Page on the club website or a Twitter account, is Tom Lamonby fit to bowl? And it should just be updated on a daily basis. Ben, I'm sure you know.
And Tom Abel. So. Get Tom Abel in that category when he's fit again
well,
to bat and see if
yeah,
he can bowl again as well.
I mean, I presume that the phrase, a spell on the sidelines, which they use to describe his hamstring injury, means that he's not going to be up for consideration at the Oval.
And yeah, no, it was the same.
I'm thinking second half May before he's available.
I agree,
I think
it'd been
the first block. It was the same leg as his tear last year, wasn't it? Is that right?
Which is it? Is it left or right?
It was the same as last year.
I know, but I asked Ben this and he didn't know. So.
Yeah, well, you'll be able to see if you go back on the live stream. It's not particularly.
Yeah.
The fact that it was the same was the worrying point. It was a rip down the muscle.
Absolutely.
So whether he has surgery or how he does that, I can't see him playing in the first block at all. Whether he's fit for the blast is the next issue.
It was a pretty, you know, it wasn't anything much to the run, was it? It was just just up from a jog, and he wasn't sprinting it. It wasn't like when Eddie Byram, sorry Dan, ran at Hildreth in that T20 in the COVID year when Hildy had to absolutely sprint and his poor old 37-year-old legs just gave away and he ripped his hammy. Well, the good news, I suppose, is then that we've got a relatively settled batting order for April at least. And then when Tom Abel and Tom Cole Cadmore return, the Brains Trust will have themselves a nice selection dilemma.
Do we think it's settled, though? I thought Ben Green looked really good against Exeter University, and I thought Tom Banton didn't look very good. And I'll be honest, I thought Ben Green would have been picked ahead of Tom Banton to bat in that number five spot. For the Kent game, I was really surprised on the morning that Ben Green looked so good against Exeter University. I know it's only pre-season friendly, but when Banton did nothing in his couple of chances, That surprised me. And Green might have bowled.
He batted well against Kent. Tom Benson batted really well.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, that. But I mean, just before that game, were we not surprised?
I was surprised.
I was delighted surprised.
Yes, me too. Yeah, he's a class player.
Green, I think Green, if he played, it would have been instead of Leonard, wouldn't it? If anyone, you'd have Banton still would have played, I suspect. There would have been no point picking six bowling options.
Yeah.
But then Ben Green would have had to bat eight.
That's fine, well, he's done that before.
Nine.
That's about Aldridge. Where he should bat.
I think Aldridge would probably bat ahead of Green, would he? I don't know. That's a tricky. I just think if Green doesn't play last week, I don't think he plays the rest of the season now. I think that was. You think TKC, Ameed, and Abel all to come back in at some point. If he's not going to play against Kent, then I don't see him playing again, really.
Well,
I think he will get a Red Bull chance this year, I reckon.
But who would he come in?
Maybe not a chance, as in, you know, we are getting used to three or four or five games. To
if Dixon doesn't get any runs, they could try him at the top of the order again, as they did back in 2020.
They'd just put Lammerby back there, wouldn't they?
No, I would want to give Ameed that spot because I think the things I was pleased with, I'm pleased Banton's in because for two reasons. One, he is the Cola Cadmore option at five.
Yeah.
So that's a natural fit. But two, he's got to be in and in a block now and told because as Anthony said, he looked like he was playing his natural game. So he's got to be given the confidence of you're in for four or five games or whatever that is.
Yeah, absolutely.
But the other thing for me is if Renshaw is going to open, I'm not sure which way around it is. Has Renshaw come and the Australian board said, we want him to open in Championship cricket? Or has he come and said he wants to open? Or has them said to him, Lammerby's going to bat three this year? Now Abes is out, so you can open. I don't know which way around, but I'm not sold on the Dixon option. And Ameed did enough, albeit in the 50 overs. You know, give him a chance as well, maybe.
Well, I thought when Renshaw and Lammerby opened together a couple of years ago, they made a pretty decent partnership. They looked like they really enjoyed batting together. Maybe gets Warren
to left-handers.
Two left-handers. You want a right hand?
That's all that left-hand. Is. Yeah.
I don't.
And it's weird, isn't it?
Because that Andrew Strauss and
Alex. It's the cycle. We've spent a long time
pretty decent together.
We've spent a long time talking on here about the psychology of Abel, you know, Abel, should he open, should he bat three or four when he was captain? You know, there isn't a lot of difference, especially in Somerset's side, between opening and batting three a lot of the time. But if psychologically Lammerby feels happier batting at three, and I know it's only Kent and it's the Kookaburra ball, et cetera, et cetera, but if he's going to bat at three and get 90 every game, I'll take that and I'll bat him at three and I'll work Renshaw and another as the openers for the first, certainly for this first block.
Has he opened every time he's played a championship game for us?
Renshaw?
No, Lammerby.
Lammerby. No. He batted at about six against Leicestershire in 2021, and he batted at three at Southport in 2022. There might be other examples, but I think I'd say 90% of the time he's opened. There's been the odd time where he's dropped down.
But I think the chance was Andy Mead at Hampshire at the GS Bowl last year, at the end of the season. That was the thing that really threw me. When he came in and batted four and said he wanted to bat four. I thought he's an opening bat. A lot of what I've seen of him for Warwickshire, opening the One Day Cup, Scotland, whatever it is, I think he's an opener. That's why it really surprised me when suddenly at Hampshire they decided to bat him at four. So I thought he was going for Dixon space, but then maybe actually is he going for that 4-5 role?
Well, I would rather see him opener, wasn't he? Which is
exactly.
Yeah, that's why it threw everyone.
And I think that is a spot up for grabs. I think he can compete with Dixon for that spot rather than competing with TKC, Banton, Goldsworthy, Green and everyone else for the 4-5 sort of spot.
Lammerby to me feels like the most flexible player in that batting order who could potentially bat anywhere from 1 to 6. Like you say, Dixon you feel is an opener. Renshaw is 1, 2 or 3. Abel is 1, 2 or 3. And then you feel like Goldsworthy and Banton. And well, Rue's probably one who could be batting higher once his younger brother comes in and takes the gloves off him. He can go up and open. Banton and Goldsworthy, you feel are Goldsworthy maybe a 3 or 4, and then Banton is a 4, 5 or 6. Lammerby, you feel like he could bat anywhere and churn out more or less the same scores.
The other consideration is, and I know it's a bit of a long shot, but if James Rowe was to be unavailable, Banton, having played a block of championship games, and could then take the gloves and bat six or something. So that's
James
an additional
never
degree
of
flexibility.
Injured, Steve. He is a freak of nature.
I'm thinking more about Ben Foulkes gets injured and he ends up getting an international call up.
They're talking about Ollie Robinson now, aren't they?
Yeah, they were talking. I listened to the Wisden podcast today, which is quite a good listen. They all seem to be talking about Ollie Robinson. Oh, there was a good point about the Kookaburra ball that Mark Butcher made, which I'll quickly talk about now. He was saying that in the domestic competitions where they use home test matches where they use the Kookaburra ball, i.e. Australia and South Africa, the pitches are a lot more abrasive. They sort of damage the ball a little bit more, if you like, and that enables you to get it reversing a little bit more towards the back end of the innings. But English pitches or UK pitches are generally pretty pretty kind to the ball, shall we say. So the Kookaburra doesn't really get damaged, and you're sort of scuffed up and able to reverse, so it just kind of stays the same for between overs, kind of 20 and 18, doesn't really do anything. And he, like his brother-in-law Alex Stewart, thinks it is a load of old bollocks and it should be knocked on the head sooner rather than later. I mean, what did you think Rob Key thought as he was looking out of his office at Lords this week? Middlesex against Glamorgan with the Kookaburra ball, Sam Northeast racking up 335, I think it was, and could have gone on potentially. And then what did Middlesex finish on? 625.
Ryan Higgins got a double, didn't he?
Yeah.
What was it?
Even
1200 runs for 13 wickets.
Yeah.
What sort of?
Even Tom Helm got a 50. That just makes a mockery of it.
Yeah.
Tell you what, Ian, from what you were saying, I've got a really good idea. Ooh, let's use the Kookaburra ball when we play the championship games in August. And oh no, sorry, that's not going to work, is it?
Yeah.
Are there a turn August?
I was just about to say there's what, I think it's one at the start and one at the end of August.
It's two at the end.
We got it's Warwickshire away and Durham at home.
Durham at home.
There we go.
Yeah, 22nd and 29th.
It's because the 100 starts earlier this year. It's like middle of July till middle of August, I think. So it's just the way it's shifted around. Like, there's still a similar amount of county championship cricket at the height of summer, if you define it as like June, July, August. It's just shifted a bit, really, from compared to last year when it was more sort of June, July. So,
yeah.
Then the last week of the school holidays, there's no game, which seems a bit daft. We've got a gap.
That's kind of Royal London semi-finals time, isn't it?
That's end of August. Weird as well.
It's the weekend of the 100 final as well, the Royal London semis.
That's when I book holiday.
We got two games.
Harry, we will have to cover commentary on the semi-final for him if he's on holiday.
Well, Warwickshire away.
When Andy Mead scores 1,000 runs.
Warwickshire away is the 22nd to the 25th of August. Durham at home is the 29th to the 1st of September. Then it's T20's quarterfinals week, 3rd of September to the 6th of September. And then we've got Surrey at home in the Championship on the 9th of September. So it's pretty busy. I think you're thinking the 15th, week commencing the 12th of August. That's when you got your one-day cup quarterfinals and semi-finals.
And the last round of the group stage is on the Tuesday 13th, I think. We're just not playing in it, though. We're the team that misses out from our group. So there's not really a gap.
So I will be able to rest everyone ready for the knockout phase, and Anthony will be on his phone to EasyJet changing his flights.
And there's still no cricket on.
I'm going up to North Devon, then. I've booked North Devon.
Okay.
We'll just play Insto, Andy.
Easy
to
change.
Insto is a good track for a draw.
Oh, sorry. Dad is just now about to tell me that there's a Western Storm game on the Bank Holiday Monday.
There's Western Storm Bank Holiday Monday, yeah.
Well, they signed someone pretty decent, didn't they? Amanda J.
Yeah. Amanda Dillon. Yeah, she's a very good signing. Yeah, I think I'm surprised they didn't go for a pace bowler, because that's the department they really lack numbers, particularly with Filer and Gibson being away a lot. But I suppose when you've got a player of the quality of Wellington available, you've got to go for it. So yeah, no issues with that at all. She's very excited.
Working on Charlie Dean to come down and join the Western Storm as well. That's the next target. Get her down here as well. She did all right in New Zealand. So see what happens.
What have we got next? Right, I was while we briefly talked about the 100, the topic of investment into the 100 is seeming to be gathering momentum in the media, and it's all a lot of people can seem to be talking about. I mean, I guess the point of it is that the money, multi-billionaire hedge funds or investment in angels or whatever will buy 100 franchises or stakes in 100 franchises. Some of that money will trickle down to the counties, and then the 100 will be run for a profit at the expense of English cricket. Discuss.
I think the rich will get richer, yeah. and the poor will be allowed to go to the wall, is what it amounts to.
The phrase that I always think when I hear investment is return on investment, i.e. it's not a donation, which, you know, it kind of gets mealy mouth talked around, investment, and they kind of buttering it up or disguising it as a donation. I mean, a donation is when Christopher Ondaatje gives the club, you know, however much money it was to build a pavilion and an indoor school in his name. You know, he did the same down in Devon, and he gets his name on the side of the building. That's a donation. Investment is, you know, it's shrewd money going in and expecting a bit more money back, and that money is only going to come at the expense of the counties, is it? Surely not. I don't know. I mean, I do believe Gordon Hollins when he says all the money that the club makes goes into making cricket better at the county ground. That's why you're paying £5.50 a pint, and you know they're releasing a whole suite of shirts and God knows what else every year, because that they need to sell merchandise to pay for the cricket at Taunton, because we can only sell 8,500 seats for a blast game. And that's just the way it is. Dan, were you gonna jump in?
Well, I was gonna say I'm not an expert on all the finances and all that and investment and everything, but the small counties have got to make sure that they are united and make sure they get a good deal from this. Because the way it sounds is that the teams that host 100 teams are going to get disproportionately more of the money. I mean, I say the money as though it's just going to, yeah, as you said, it's like it's going to be a donation, but that's not obviously how it works. But the small counties have got to make sure the gap doesn't widen. This money should be used to narrow the gap between the small counties and the big counties. The big counties don't need the money as much. I mean, some of them are in debt as well, but there was talk in a Telegraph article about potentially there's one version of the deal where the money's more spread around the small counties. There's another version where the big counties still get, the big counties get a bit more and the small counties get a bit less. It's something to do with the way the excess money after the money to the hosting counties is distributed. So either the excess money will be split between all 18 counties or just the small counties. So the small counties need to come together and make sure that they are strong in it going to them, because the big counties are already going to get this extra money for hosting. That's broadly the way I saw it on the Telegraph. Basically, the point is the small counties need to fight their corner and make sure they don't get a raw deal from this.
Yeah. Any private investment, I believe, will lead to an expansion of the 100.
Yep.
It will have to. Every franchise league.
The eight counties who've got it will say what we have we hold. They won't want to expand it to 10, let alone 18 or whatever other option has been put to them.
But what
you will see the money being concentrated on those eight franchises.
Your cartel of 800 owners, let's say, they could potentially expand it by adding teams. Adding teams equals a longer window. It equals more TV money for more games.
There's a critical mass, and I think the critical mass is bigger than eight.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. or potentially they
we won't be in it anyway, because we're not in a, you know, it'll be Bristol that is added to it. If anywhere is added to it, it'll be Bristol and Newcastle.
Well maybe or the new stadium just off the M5 outside of Bristol,
it won't be Taunton and it won't be Chester Street.
Was there another ground in Newcastle?
Gosforth, isn't it? And they had a great away day at Gosforth.
Gosforth's not big enough, it's tiny.
I'll go and watch that.
Or it might possibly be Beckenham as a third London.
Oh yeah, there is that, which is a load of complete bollocks. Jesus. The thing is, it's difficult to... I don't want the 100 to expand to 18 teams, because that would mean the end of the blast. Like, that's a load of complete rubbish. If the 100 expands to 18 teams aren't the counties, that's just complete bullshit. Like, there's no perfect way to do it. But the way I would do it is the eight teams should remain, but the games and the ticket receipts, the money, should be more spread between the counties. So Somerset should host a Welsh Fire doubleheader, for example. I know it sounds a bit ludicrous, but...
Well, that was the plan.
We were going to have a women's game, wasn't it? No one would go and watch that. We were going to have
a double header, or were we just going to have a women's game in 2020?
We were going to have a women's game. Now they've gone for the double headers model now, and that's going to stay. But I would just spread the double headers around the counties a bit more. But the problem is, it won't happen, because the big counties won't want to lose any matches. Welsh Fire, you know, Glamorgan aren't going to want to lose two of their matches, one each to Gloucestershire and Somerset, for example. So it's not going to happen.
They're going to lose, you know, at least, you know, £200 or £300 of gate receipts if they lose a home game.
On a more positive financial note, I did read that £35 million boost for grassroots cricket in England.
Nice, you'll be up in your coaching fees, Harry, to take that into account, won't you?
I did think, flipping out, where's all that money come from? We're just printing it out.
There was a word they used, wasn't there? They're going to make the 16 host venues for the women's T20 or the men's T20 in a few years. What was the word they used? It was like cricket centres, but it was like cricket domes or something like that.
Hubs.
Yeah, they love the word hub.
What's a cricket hub?
That's an ECB buzzword. They got one in...
Fancy word for an indoor school?
Basically, yeah, I think so. I think that's the idea. Yeah. I think Bradford's got quite a new one. I think...
Yes, Bradford, yeah.
Indoor one.
Yeah. It's a big indoor school. It's a really big indoor school.
So would it be more like...
Millfield.
I don't know that one, but I do know the University of Exeter, where you have to walk through to get to the cricket centre right at the back.
Bigger than that, I think.
No, but halfway through, you kind of look out of a cafe into like the big indoor tennis courts. Would it be something like that, where you can almost play?
Yeah, maybe that sort of size. Yeah.
Not quite a full size match indoors, but pretty close to it.
I think it'd also have other facilities. The idea is it'd be specifically cricket, with gym and nutrition and physios and all of that around it, and make it the hub of the area coming there in the winter, and building up the youth. Like, Devon youth cricket is all being slightly rebranded, with more girls teams coming in, and they're losing a boys youth team to get more girls teams, and trying to level up that in the pathways as well. I think that's all part of the rebranding. There's a lot written about it, which you have to filter through, a bit like that Andrew Strauss thing, like page after page of it, to try and understand what's going on.
I did see the announcement, and I did have a brief look at it, but I've not read it in any sort of depth. Too busy keeping an eye on goings on at Canterbury. Just going back to Pretorius, then, he does seem to be a pretty proficient white ball player as well. So I presume, would we have slipped an option to extend for the Blast based on whether he's going to be selected for the South African side for the World Cup? I know a lot of sides are waiting on those squads to be announced before.
He's a long way away from the South African squad.
Mm. I think he's about 12th choice seamer for South Africa, which is better for us. But
Shoaib Bashir, how far down the pecking order was he?
He's probably not the 10th, to be fair.
That's true.
It said on Quick Info on an article that Somerset are waiting for a squad to be announced for the T20 World Cup before we sign any overseas players.
Okay, so it might be more of a case that we could get somebody better than him.
Jason said that.
maybe.
And if the worst comes to the worst, we might. That's quite unfair on the blokes. If the worst, comes to the worst, we'll have you.
Well, we might get Ish Sodhi. We might get Ish Sodhi.
That's true.
Would we?
He didn't play much for New Zealand in the White Ball stuff. I still think he'd get in their squad. I still think they'd pick him, even if they do play.
Chapman,
you might not.
Santa. I just said we signed him as an injury replacement for Roloff last year, didn't we? So would we go back to playing two spinners?
Or do we play Bash instead of Roloff?
No,
as much as we love Roloff.
How dare you, Harry? How dare you?
I know, but I worry about Roloff's injury. I worry about Roloff's age and injury record. Of course, I love the bloke, and he's brilliant when he's on fire, but he is getting on. He's nearly 40 now, and he has got an injury record.
Yeah, so yeah, but his injury do we play Bashir? Broken fingers from being a fucking hero.
Don't worry, he'll play on through broken fingers. Don't worry about that.
Roloff will definitely play. He's on a white ball contract. It's the only format he can play for us. He'll definitely play. I think the question is whether Bashir maybe plays alongside him. I mean, he might do sometimes, maybe not all the time. It depends on conditions.
I just mean if Roloff gets injured. If Roloff gets injured, do we go Bash for the whole tournament?
No, I don't think we should play Bash at all. I think we should just nurture him as a proper Red Bull spin bowler and not.
I mean, he's going to have to play in the 50 overs.
Yeah, that's 50 overs a different kettle of fish. Yeah. He could get murdered in the blast.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't bowl against finals day. He didn't bowl against Surrey, did he? And then he was subbed out for Casey Aldridge final, which is probably a good move.
Just nurture him as a proper spin bowler who's going to take wickets in Red Bull cricket for Somerset and hopefully for England as well, instead of trying to turn him into something he's not.
Can't really argue with that. Well, we've got through.
Can I just on the overseas?
Sorry, Steve, go on.
I was just going to say, I think you retweeted it, Shep, that the name of Derbyshire's overseas signing, if ever was made to play at Cat Taunton, we could do with another pavilion, couldn't we?
Hey. Where's Derbyshire's overseas? They're in the pavilion. That's his name.
Yeah, they're in the pavilion. They're in the pavilion.
Oh, and I got a bit of shit off a few people today for saying that stumping in the IPL wasn't as good as everybody was making it out to be. I'll just quantify that. Do you know the one I'm talking about? It was it Klassen?
Yeah.
Klassen. He's seen the. If you're good enough,
jumped away from the stumps.
Yeah, if you're good enough to stand up to a bowler of that pace, which is that's the difficult bit. There is no easier stumping than the one that he got, which is straight into the gloves, right next to the off bail. So tweeting that and saying, making a big deal of that over social media is to me the equivalent of playing a forward defensive to a 95 mile an hour bowler. Do you see what I mean? Facing a 95 mile an hour bowler is the difficult bit. Playing the forward defensive is being good enough to face a 95 mile an hour bowler is the difficult bit. Playing a forward defensive is the easy bit. Do you see what I mean? If he's taking legside stumpings, but if that ball's 2 foot down the leg side and he's got a cross and put it back, that is a worldie. But the stumper there didn't have to move and just went back. So there we go. That's my justification for that.
It's a bit like Premier League or football goalkeepers who, rather than just catching the ball, have to dive and punch it away or something. And it's, and you watch it, you see it so often, and you think, just catch the damn thing. But no, it looks better. I'll get a match of the day if I dive and roll around afterwards or something. That was exactly the same, Shep. I'm with you. I'm no wicket keeper. Yeah, exactly. How would Jack Russell have done that? You would hardly have noticed it and the bails would have been off.
If you look at, there's that Jack Russell highlight reel that does the rounds on Twitter every now and again, where it was against us in there. Was it the C&G final? That is brilliant. That one that he takes, I think it's Ian Harvey, where he literally gets it one-handed, left-handed down the leg side and that's absolutely different class. But just being stood up and having the ball go straight into gloves and go thank you very much, it's difficult. It is difficult standing up to an 85 mile an hour bowler, but if you're standing up to an 85 mile an hour bowler, that's the easiest stumping you're going to get.
The difficult thing though, Sheps, to keep your head down and to focus.
I'd say if you're, it's a bit like facing a really quick bowler. If you do it day in, day out, yeah. it becomes second nature. The first time you do it, you're like, oh, shit, what's going on here?
Yeah.
But if you're there and the pitch is good, you should just be there, bang, bang, bang. And he's seen it all the way. It's not gone between bat and pad. The bat has not gone out. He's not been unsighted with it. He's literally seen it all the way. Thank you very much. So,
but you, it must be quite hard to keep your head down with that ball coming at you at 90 miles an hour.
But that's the training part of it, you see. You train. Yeah, yeah. You train to make that easy.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? It's like...
I've been reading Alex Stewart's autobiography recently, and it's amazing hearing him say that he can't believe why they kept picking him ahead of Jack Russell. Hmm. He kept being like, Jack Russell's a way better keeper than me. He should be picked. And they'd wait till there were a couple of tests down in the series, and then Alex writing about how then they'd try and compromise. They'd get rid of the decent keeper and pick me in to boost the batting. And then even if I batted well, we'd still lose because I'm not as good a keeper as Jack Russell.
Just, yeah.
It's mental that even he's saying that about himself. But made me think, James Roux, I thought, worth mentioning, we haven't said much about the Canterbury game, but he took a couple of great catches. One mm-hmm. tickled down the leg side, mm-hmm. and then that pretty wide ball. I think he dropped one, I
what,
remember.
The one that's
next university. Casey, yeah.
So well, that came the up Ben Compton's one. Ankle. Yeah.
It was a good catch. Yeah. It was a very good catch, yeah. I tell you, the only thing that worried me about James Roux is that he hit the ball in the air a lot.
I did think he was a lot more aggressive, yeah.
But he was hitting the ball in the air, and he was nearly caught several times, you know, he just cleared fielders and what have you.
Maybe it's a baz ball thing got to him.
Which is fine, but I like to see James Roux hitting the ball along the ground, you know, rather than taking risks with hitting it in the air. I just wonder if he's trying to turn himself into...
Was it a timing thing? Was he just early on shots, or was it a deliberate thing? I didn't see much of his bat on Saturday.
No, I think it was deliberate. And he got out to one as well.
Was he trying to take the outfield out of the games partly, do you think? Did he think he wasn't going to get value for hitting a lot on the ground?
He made a pickup shot, and the first one he hit it for six. The next one he went straight up in the air, and he didn't need to be hitting the ball at him.
I wrote that down as well. I thought it might have been the 110 over thing. Just they knew they had a slim chance of winning the game. Could they get to 400 or 450 for the 100 over mark was my thinking. But yeah, I agree. It did look slightly different to how we saw him last year.
Yeah.
I think at the overly it'd be different. And I think it depends how early he came in. How many times last year did James Roux at six come in with 150, 200 on the board? Very, very rarely. So maybe it was slightly
252
different.
For four we were when Roux come in. So.
Yeah. Suddenly he's a different position, and the Kookaburra ball being flat, maybe that all just made him think a bit more expansively.
I'm just looking at the forecast for the Oval on Friday. The long
it's dry, 20 good, degrees. Pat Michaud.
Pretty good.
Dry in 20 degrees? I take that's it it's still going to be Met pissing down in the southwest.
Actually, so, but Friday, Saturday, Sunday, look, between 15 to 20 degrees, it's overnight, Charlie.
Mm. I've been seeing the pictures of Worcester today. I wonder if they'll ever play a grand game at New Road this year.
You got to feel sorry for them, haven't you?
Oh, have you seen Westwood Ho's ground as well? Look at the pictures online of Westwood Ho. Cool, that's awful. North Devon Coast. Yeah, I can't see them playing there. Topsham ex-university ground have cancelled all their cricket for the university's home ground in April. Normally they play about 30 pre-season games.
It's not quite in a valley, but it just seems the kind of ground that gets waterlogged down
M5, there. I think the M5 water just shoots off all the logging straight off the ground.
I mean, I know.
But yeah, Westwood Ho, look that picture up.
I think everywhere around this part of the world at the moment is waterlogged. I mean, Newton Abbott cancelled their horse racing fixture for next Tuesday already. It's so bad. You know, down at South Devon, we just can't get on the outfield of the square to do any work. It's not a good time to be a groundsman or groundsperson. Sorry, or member of.
We trained in football boots. This time last week, I was leading two teams for our first outdoor net of the year. We didn't net. We literally did catching drills in football boots and coats and trousers. And then tonight was called off because we probably ruined it in our rugby boots.
I was going to say, going on any outfield in football boots is going to get you a kick up the backside from any groundsperson fairly
times.
Quickly. So, yes, our best wishes. But, Worcester, they're going to have to move away from New Road, aren't they? You don't see any long-term solution.
I'm looking forward to a different first-class ground to take off. Have you been to Kidderminster before, Anthony? I've never been.
I haven't. No, it'd be a new one.
Been there for football, but not for cricket.
Yeah, I've been to the football, actually. The Aggies, isn't it? They talk about the pie.
Harriers. Agbra's the ground,
Agbra, that's it, yeah. Harriers at Agbra.
It's famous for carpets, isn't it? Kidderminster. Is that right?
Yeah, used to be.
Yeah. Random knowledge.
There you go. See, I've dropped some knowledge. You boys pick it up. Famous for carpets.
Very modern football ground.
You sure you're not mixing it up with Axminster?
I'm going to have to Google it now. Hold on.
I'm sure when Harry said it, it rang a bell. So.
Let's see. Yeah, Kidderminster Carpets.
Tiverton Town used to be sponsored by carpets.
There is a shop
in Kidderminster Carpet Factory.
There's a shop in Kidderminster called Kidderminster Carpets, but I'm not sure whether that's.
Yeah, there's a whole website here about it. Made in Kidderminster, the history of the carpet industry.
Oh, well, there you
fair
are.
Enough. There,
you
so
there we go. The town is best known for its manufacture of carpets from about 1735, though there it has been much reduced recently.
Oh, there we go. So you'd be able to pick up.
Well
new...
done, Harry. Yes. Yeah. That's niche knowledge, that is. Well done.
I mean, it was me. I said it. You'll be able to pick up a new rug or two for Gibson Towers when you're up there.
I just want to say that's a pile of knowledge from you guys.
Oh, well, it's wall to wall with me, I tell you.
We're
literally going to sit down here thinking about carpet puns now.
8 o'clock is rolling round. I want my supper.
Well, you've got 3 minutes of me thinking up carpet puns. Okay, but well, Charlie Taylor today, was that Charlie... On his breakfast show this morning, was asking for cricket-based toad/frog-related puns. Now, anytime anything like that happens, I instantly have to down tools and spend until I've got about 10 decent ones, whether it's Test Match Special or whoever or somebody on a WhatsApp group or whatever is or Twitter is thinking about those. So, you know, Christmas-related cricketers or whatnot, that's it. I'm down in tools till I've done a top 10 of those. So three of those got read out. I had... Johnny Bear Stowed, Dennis Lilypad, and Tom Tadpole Cadmore.
You should have given this at the start.
Don't give up the day job.
I do give up the day job. That's the trouble. I give up the day job for half an hour and try and work all this bloody nonsense out.
Well, let's hope Miguel Protodius does well for us.
Protodius.
Oh, very good.
Ooh, yeah,
he's on fire tonight. Is that Harry? I tell you.
Have that. I'm holding you hostage here till 8 o'clock, Gibbo.
The clock is striking 8.
Is it? Well, it must be 2.
It's 8 o'clock in Langport.
It's 2 minutes past, but then I suppose Langport has been in its own.
He's
time,
a bit so. Further east than you, so oh, that's why.
Well, still light, you could say it's 1958 in Langport, and I wouldn't show you the year all the time, but anyway, that's possibly a little bit cruel to the residents of that fine Somerset village. But right,
Langport is a bloody sight more of a destination than Newton Abbott.
Correct. You will not get any argument for me from that, Gibbo. Right.
Do you claim Newton Abbott, not King Stainton's yet, do you?
Sorry?
Do you claim Newton Abbott or King Stainton's?
Oh, it's all the same now.
We're blurred into one.
It's all
one. Well, the race course is actually in King Stainton, but it's still called Newton Abbott Racecourse, and Newton Abbott Rugby Club actually play in King Stainton, and big Newton Abbott Tesco's is still in King Stainton as well. So, yeah, there's not been a bloody turf war about it yet, but give it a few years.
Not yet.
Right, any other business, gents? This has degenerated into about 20 minutes of talking absolute rubbish about carpets.
Well, you tell them
Tesco's and that was God fun. Knows what else.
That was fun.
All right.
We've waited 6 months.
I enjoyed carpets more than the 100.
Yeah,
that's true.
Right, we waited 6 months for a game to talk about, and we spoke about the game for about 10 minutes, and then talked about carpets. And
yeah, have you not listened to this podcast before? That's what happens. Yeah.
Welcome to our world.
Yeah. Safe travels up to the Oval, Gibbo and Harry. Dan, did you actually go down to Canterbury?
Yeah, I was at Canterbury.
Oh, we could have mentioned that 45 minutes ago.
I wasn't able to announce on Twitter that I was there.
I saw your dad and your brother went, but maybe you didn't. All right.
They wouldn't go, not me. God. I was there Saturday, Sunday, and I'll be there on this Saturday, Sunday at the Oval as well.
So. All right. No. Happy days. Well, it's me and you left out then, Steve. I'm going to check some races this Saturday.
Yeah, right. I'm doing my planning, don't worry.
All right. Happy days. Right. Night, everyone.
See you later, everyone.
Bye. Cheers, guys.
Yeah,
bye.
Bye.